A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 58. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of three adaptations of ghost stories by M.R. James. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
So we are doing something a little bit different with our format, talking about three different short telefilms. In our last episode, we talked about A Warning to the Curious, which was a 1972 BBC production. And we talked about Casting the Runes, which was a 1979 ITV production.
And so this time we're going to continue our discussion of the works of M.R. James and these adaptations. And we're going to talk about a BBC film from 1968 called Whistle and I'll Come to You.
And as you can, of course, guess, we are deviating a little bit from science fiction this time, as we often like to do, covering the surrounding topics. So we're doing ghost stories and the supernatural. These are all considered ghost stories, but they tend to be what now in current parlance we'd more consider supernatural shows. Whistle and I'll Come to You was a 1968 BBC telefilm that was produced for the Omnibus Arts Show, and it was adapted from an M.R. James short story called Oh Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad.
That's right. They curtailed the title slightly for the telefilm.
Which was probably worth doing.
Yes. It does have a rather long title, which I think comes from a Burns poem, I gather. But in the telefilm, we have the well-known British actor Michael Horden playing Professor Parkins, a Cambridge academic, as was so often the case in the stories of M.R. James. And he is on a walking holiday on the Norfolk coast. And he's a rather lonely figure, a rather sort of lonely character, again, on this very sort of bleak East Anglian coastal landscape. And we see him pottering around. And that's really how the story begins, this chap wandering around the landscape, staying at a hotel and generally just amusing himself.
And as he's wandering around, he's sort of poking around and looking at different things he finds, and he runs across a gravesite that seems to be almost an isolated gravesite that seems to be quite old and is sort of falling apart as the land is giving way at one side next to where the sea is, right on the coast. And he sort of pokes around at this grave and this site here and finds a whistle, a very old, long, thin whistle. And he takes the whistle and takes it back to his hotel, and he's looking at it and wondering about what it is, and he finds an inscription on it and carefully manages to read the inscription, and he translates the inscription from Latin into English.
And it's an interesting inscription, as you say, which he translates as the sort of memorable phrase, "Who is this? Who is coming?" And he repeats that several times, wondering what it means. But of course, he's also, as you say, he's got this long whistle, which I guess, I'm not sure if it's made out of bone or of wood or something like that, Brian. It appears to be quite ancient. And he cleans it out in his hotel room. So as well as translating the inscription, he also cleans the sort of earth out of it. And of course, if you've got a whistle, it would be very difficult not to blow that whistle. And of course, he does blow the whistle. And then, well,
then all sorts of things ensue, don't they?
They do. And that would be telling.
Yes. Well, it's clear that the whistle is for summoning something. And the first thing we see is wind, that it summons wind, but it summons more than that too. And the story of what it summons and what happens to him is what is key to this story.
Absolutely. And we've had a clue in a way with the inscription as well.
So the production runs about 42 minutes. It aired in 1968 on the BBC, and it was, of course, in black and white. And it has this classic black and white spooky story look to it that I think always enhances these types of ghost stories and spooky supernatural stories.
Yes, absolutely. It does look quite distinctive. It's the only one of the three films in black and white. And we talked about some of the advantages that the colour filming had, particularly with A Warning to the Curious. And of course, this film gets the advantages of black and white looking that bit more ghostly and spooky. And Whistle and I'll Come to You was adapted from the M.R. James story, and it was adapted, directed, and produced by Jonathan Miller.
So it was a bit of a one-man show, I guess, behind the scenes, anyhow.
Yes, absolutely. Very much a one-man production by a very interesting character, a true Renaissance man, Jonathan Miller, who qualified as a doctor. He's a very well-known writer. He directs. He's particularly well-known for directing opera. He was quite famous in the 60s for being a member of the Beyond the Fringe comedy group with people like Alan Bennett, Peter Cook, and Dudley Moore. He's been a TV presenter and had some very well-known documentary programs on television over the years. So quite an interesting character, and he brought a particular sort of feel and background to this adaptation of this M.R. James short story. Although, as he says himself, he didn't intend this as an adaptation. He intended it more, in his own words, as an essay on the story, as a sort of musing about the original story by M.R. James, rather than a direct adaptation.
That's an interesting point, because it has a very different tone from the original, as Casting the Runes did to a point, but this does much more so. It follows the story fairly closely, but the tone of it and the portrayal of it is quite different, and we'll talk a bit more about that shortly.
Yes, he did change the tone and the theme somewhat. As you say, we will get to that. A bit like A Warning to the Curious, it's got a quite small cast. I mean, it's dominated by Michael Horden. And the other cast have very sort of small parts, really.
And also, like A Warning to the Curious, it has this location shoot, and the location footage brings a lot to this and brings the feel of this sort of strange place where he finds this whistle and so on and so forth. So that is quite central to it.
Yes, and as you say, I think that does bring a lot to both the films we've mentioned, Whistle and I'll Come to You and A Warning to the Curious, which benefit from the coastal location shoots. And also, I think, from working in old country house type hotels, which also fit into the story very well.
Now, this may be the most experimental of the three films. It has a variety of odd camera angles in it. It does some fairly stark things with the black and white film, and has these large stretches without dialogue or without intelligible dialogue. Horden is sort of muttering as the main character and makes all these, you know, mumbling noises and starts to say something and then stops. And it does sort of emphasize the loneliness, and, you know, the sense of dread builds with that. But it was definitely unusual and brought that sort of strange experimental style to this.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, I don't know, because I haven't been able to find out, but I get the impression that Michael Horden wasn't necessarily given much of a script in places. And I think quite unusually for 1968 television, he seems to be improvising in various places. And we get these, as you say, these odd little mutterings and noises and him talking to himself. As you say, he's quite a lonely character who has difficulties interacting with the other people he meets.
That's an interesting point. There were also some other characters that sort of mumble and mutter at times as well.
Yes. And as you say, he's a lonely character, and it also seems to, as you say, it builds up the strange sense of what's going on in this story as he investigates this whistle and as the consequences of blowing the whistle start to happen. And perhaps this is where we get into discussing some of the theme and tone elements that we mentioned, because Jonathan Miller seems to be suggesting in places that what Professor Parkins is encountering is not, strictly speaking, the supernatural, and that there may be a psychological nature to what's happening to him, and it may be a reflection of his own problems rather than something more strange and mysterious. And I think I'm right in saying, Brian, that the adaptation was criticised by some people because of this.
It does go to places other than M.R. James did in this and his other ghost stories. They were really about the supernatural, and they tended to be focused on the upper class or the gentry. You know, a lot of the characters in the various stories either had a household with several servants, or they were staying in fancy hotels that had servants, and the sort of upper class people were sensible and clever and knew what was going on, and the servants were a little more, shall we say, clueless about what was happening. And it almost seems like Miller was reversing that. So the upper class people, like Parkins, are sort of confused and befuddled and have to have everything done for them by the servants, and the servants are the sensible ones. So I think there's something of that that is the essay about the original story that Miller was talking about.
Right, that is interesting, actually, yes. An interpretation that I hadn't really considered, but yeah, interesting stuff in this adaptation. And it is quite scary in places. Again, not many special effects, but there are a couple, and they're quite disturbing. And interestingly, they do hark back to the very original, one of the very original illustrations done for one of M.R. James' first books of ghost stories. And I think Miller took his inspiration from the pictures done for the original M.R. James collection. And it's quite well remembered, this television film. Very influential, well remembered. Probably it was partly the inspiration for the BBC Christmas Ghost Story, which would become a regular from 1971 onwards, a few years later.
And it was also apparently number 83 in Channel 4's 100 Greatest Scary Moments.
Yes.
So that's an interesting one too.
Yes, I mean, just to drift off topic slightly, Channel 4 did do this collection of great scary moments, and several of the subjects that we featured in British Invaders did crop up in the top 100. And as you say, Brian, Whistle and I'll Come to You came in at number 83.
Most of the others we haven't actually mentioned this list in British Invaders. I think we may have mentioned it once or twice, but we have covered a number of things that are on that list.
Yes, absolutely. Scholarship.
The darkest of them is called Whistle and I'll Come to You. It's a story of solitude and terror, and it has a moral too. It hints at the dangers of intellectual pride and shows how a man's reason can be overthrown when he fails to acknowledge those forces inside himself which he simply cannot understand.
Now, we should talk about some of the other adaptations of M.R. James' work. We're not going to go into great detail about these, but there have been a lot of things done with them, so we should talk about some of those. There have been a number of radio adaptations. Casting the Runes was adapted for radio by CBS in 1947, so American radio all the way back then in 47. And right up to 2007, Radio 4 had a series with Derek Jacobi introducing it. And there have been a number of audiobook versions that have had some broadcasts. David Collings did some readings, and so did Jeffrey Balladin and Derek Jacobi. So there have been a number of very good British readers doing this and reading these stories, going back to that tradition of M.R. James reading his own stories.
Yeah, and some of those are very well reviewed, in particular David Collins, who has also done some work for Big Finish, and his readings of M.R. James, which you can get on CD audiobook, are very popular and very well received.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. David Collins has a very good voice that would work very well for that.
Yeah.
There have also been some stage productions. Casting the Runes, again, was done on stage in Leeds in 2006. And the Nunky Theatre Company tours the UK with various stage productions of different M.R. James stories. So there's quite a bit happening on stage as well, which I think could also work quite well.
Yes, they might be. They must be quite atmospheric and spooky stage productions, I would imagine. So television, obviously, for such an influential writer and with such a variety of stories to choose from, British television has gone back to M.R. James several times over the years. We think the first ones were in the 1960s when the ITV company produced four television plays of M.R. James stories, including a production of Casting the Runes and another story called Lost Hearts, which is very spooky. Now, unfortunately, none of those four films have survived, so we can't watch them now. All we have got is a trailer for the Casting the Runes, which you can watch on YouTube, which shows that looked like quite a faithful adaptation, a period adaptation of the story, that looked quite spooky, although by reputation, it's the missing film Lost Hearts that was supposed to be particularly memorable and disturbing.
Once again, we have the idea that these lost films that we can't see are the best ones that we would most want to see. And maybe they are, maybe they aren't.
Yes. And we've touched on that a few times on British Invaders, haven't we?
Of course.
The missing film phenomenon.
They always seem to be great if you can't actually watch them.
That's right. Then in the 70s, we've discussed the BBC Ghost Story for Christmas series. We've talked about Warning for the Curious, which was 1972. But the year before, they did another M.R. James story, The Stalls at Barchester. And they would go on to do Lost Hearts again. And two more stories, The Treasure of Abbot Thomas and a story called The Mezzotint. So plenty of M.R. James on British television in the 1970s. And more recently, we've had the idea of dramatised readings, again, usually broadcast at Christmas, keeping in with the tradition. In 1986, the actor Robert Powell did some readings for the BBC. And then much more recently...
Then in 2000, we had some more readings on television, this time with Christopher Lee. And these, from the bits that I've seen on YouTube, seem to be very good. And Christopher Lee is reading them in character as M.R. James at candlelight with a group of people sitting around as he's telling these ghost stories in the, I believe, unabridged original text. And they have sort of mini dramatizations that sort of superimpose onto that and go in and out while you have the reading. So those, from what I've seen, seem to be very good.
And again, Christopher Lee, he is a considerable fan of the works of M.R. James, and we've come across this before. He's a real genre fan, Christopher Lee, and I think he had a very enjoyable time reading these stories. It would be nice if there was some way of getting hold of all of the Christopher Lee readings, really.
Yes, I would love to see a DVD release of those.
More recently, BBC Four, one of the BBC digital channels, has sort of picked up the idea of the ghost story for Christmas and has done two more M.R. James adaptations in 2005 and in 2006.
A lot of the various TV versions that you mentioned there, Eamon, a lot of them are actually missing now, which is part of the reason that we focused on the ones we did. Some of the others do exist and are available on YouTube or in one form or another, but a lot of them are missing now, which is unfortunate.
Yes, it is. It's a shame, because we would like a chance to watch more of these. Or to have more recent ones, as you say, like Christopher Lee's readings, collected in some form.
I would love to see the BBC collect either the Christopher Lee readings or the 1970s Ghost Story at Christmas dramas into DVD sets and sell those. I think they would work quite well as collections.
Absolutely, yeah, we'd like to see those. Now, there's been one film adaptation of the work of M.R. James, and again, it was from the story Casting the Runes, which was rather loosely adapted into a 1957 film called Night of the Demon, which I believe in the US was known as Curse of the Demon, Brian.
Yes, Curse of the Demon was a cut down, edited, shorter version of Night of the Demon that was used in the US.
And it's an interesting film, which we have watched. It was directed by a very well-known director from the period called Jacques Tourneur, who had some very interesting film credits. Very well-known British horror film from the 50s. Got some interesting features to it. Again, another adaptation of the same story that we've been discussing. And I think it's also interesting because the director and the producer disagreed about the way the film should go, and in particular how much of the sort of supernatural monster or beastie that they should actually portray on screen.
And they ended up portraying a fair bit, I think I would say.
Yes, I think the producer won the argument, and he put in the special effect of the monster, and he put in the special effect of the monster very early on, so it appears within the first sort of 5 or 10 minutes of the film, which I remember when I saw this film as a child absolutely terrified me. Although watching it now, the special effect doesn't really stand up, and it's the other sort of supernatural creepy aspects of the film which work much better now.
Yes, as something of that type, you know, a British supernatural slash horror film from the late 50s, it works pretty well and has some nice things in it. They used elements from Casting the Runes pretty well. There are some things that should have been done better than they were, but there are some worthwhile things in it.
Yep, it's very interesting, and again, very very well regarded as a British horror film. So as we've gone along, we've talked about these three films, and I think we've started to give some ideas of what we felt were the strong and weak points of each one. So we'll get on to talk about which ones we think you should watch and what aspects worked particularly well. I think they're all good adaptations in their own right, Brian. They all work quite well.
Yes, they are. They all do different things in different ways, but they all have something to say for them.
Absolutely. And they all have their sort of creepy and scary moments. It's an unsettling series of films that we've been watching.
So I will say that the one of these that I think I enjoyed the most was actually Casting the Runes. It was not the most faithful adaptation. In some ways, it was the least faithful adaptation of these. But it had the feel as a standalone production that worked pretty well and was quite entertaining. I liked the way that it was driven by the performances. I liked the way they handled the ending, although I won't talk about that in detail here. It really worked quite well. It had the feel of an episode of something like The Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits. And the ending, I think, was done more in that style than in the style of the original M.R. James story. It really did take liberties with the story in a lot of ways, but it was a good, entertaining little show.
Okay. For me, the standout film of the three is Whistle and I'll Come to You, which I just think is a fantastic piece of British television history. And depending on how you feel about it and how you watch it, it can be quite genuinely disturbing and quite creepy to watch, particularly if you take the British invaders route and watch it late at night in a darkened room, as we recommend.
Yes, well, watching in a darkened room late at night always helps.
It enhances most of these things, yes.
It does. But I have to say that Whistle and I'll Come to You was definitely not my favorite. I was disappointed by that one. It was interesting. The idea of it being an essay on the original story was a good one, and the filming techniques in it, there were some interesting things there, but it was slow. It didn't have a lot happening in it, and it was a little hard to watch, I found, because a lot of it dealt with people walking around and mumbling, and you had mumbling instead of dialogue. And that, I think, was unfortunate. And while it was interesting in some ways, for sure, I don't think I can recommend it for casual viewing.
Okay. I mean, certainly a lot of mumbling in Whistle and I'll Come to You. Now, we haven't talked about it too much, but I guess, I'm guessing, Brian, that we would probably put these three films in a completely opposite order to each other as to which we would go for. I suspect we would probably agree that A Warning to the Curious will be in the middle of both our lists.
Yes.
But we'd reverse our first and third picks each way.
I did like A Warning to the Curious. It did the spooky aspect of things and the character on his own quite well. In some ways, I think it did some things that were similar to Whistle and I'll Come to You, but it improved upon them. I think the idea of the man who was on his own and uncomfortable and dealing with this supernatural phenomenon, I thought that was really quite well done in A Warning to the Curious. So it is, I think, also one that certainly is worth taking a look at.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I would also look at A Warning to the Curious for the interesting colour and the interesting visuals and the fantastic scenery of the the Eastern England coastline.
Yes, and it has some moments that are quite gritty and violent. I won't get into the details, and you don't see blood or graphic violence, but the suggested violence is actually quite strong.
Okay. So, Brian, you're going for Casting the Runes as your number one pick.
So what did you think of that one?
I liked it, but I would still put it in third place for me. I thought it had some very good parts to it, and I thought it had fantastic performances. I did think it was let down by the sets and by that slightly dodgy special effect, but it is saved by Jan Francis and Ian Cuthbertson. But it would still come further down my list compared to the other two.
Okay, fair enough. And those points are good ones. I think, as we had suggested before, A Warning to the Curious was the one that gets the feel of the M.R. James ghost story, both that specific one and his ghost stories in general. It gets that feel, I think, really quite well. Where the other two took the original stories and decided to go in different directions with them and make things that were quite different, and different in style and different in how they came across. And in all cases, there were some interesting things done with these.
Yeah, you're quite right, actually. I think Warning to the Curious feels the most like an M.R. James story, and the other two, as you say, are doing something slightly different with his work.
Among the towns of Jutland, Vibor justly holds a high place. It's the seat of a bishopric. It has a handsome but almost entirely new cathedral, a charming garden, a lake of great beauty, and many storks, but I'm not writing a guidebook. There are good hotels in Vibor, Prizlers and a Phoenix, but my cousin, whose experiences I have to tell you now, went to the Golden Lion the first time that he visited Vibor. The Golden Lion.
So if you want to watch them, Brian.
Well, the availability of these things. Casting the Runes from 1979. There is a Region 2 DVD from 2007. It includes a school's adaptation of another James story, Mr. Humphreys and His Inheritance. And it includes an M.R. James documentary as well. And it is still available as a Region 2 DVD. You can buy it on Amazon.co.uk and other places. And it's available for rent in the UK as well.
Now, A Warning to the Curious and Whistle and I'll Come to You were both released on DVD by the British Film Institute. But they are now both, unfortunately, out of print. And we've come across this before with the British Film Institute doing these limited releases, which they don't keep in print for terribly long. So secondhand copies of these DVDs do go for quite high prices on the various marketplaces. However, fortunately, they're both available for rent, and they can actually, both these films can be watched on YouTube, I think, where they're split up into three or four parts, Brian, so they're both available on YouTube.
Right, and A Warning to the Curious is actually available in the US on Amazon.com. It's one of their titles on their DVD-R on demand service, so for $9, they run off a DVD-R, which gets shipped to you, and that is only on Amazon.com. I don't think it's on any of the other international Amazon stores, but it is available there. So that one is available in Region 1 through that.
This very interesting Amazon experiment with DVD on demand, which I hope takes off in other regions as well as the US.
That would be nice. I have a few of these DVD-Rs from Amazon on order at the moment, but I don't have them yet, so I'll be able to comment on them a little later when I have them.
Okay. And we perhaps should mention quickly that all of the short stories that these three films are based on, I think they're all available on the internet. You can read the stories directly on the internet. if we've piqued your interest into looking into M.R. James.
Yes, I believe the works of M.R. James are in the public domain in most, if not all, countries at this point. They go back to 1925 at the most recent of the collections we discussed. And he died in 1936, so those are generally in the public domain. And there are paper hard copy versions available in collections and different types of volumes that are easy to get as well.
Yeah, and they are, I mean, for short stories, these are short stories, aren't they, Brian? They're not a terribly long read.
Yes, they tend to be about 15 pages or so. And it's not terribly surprising because they were intended for reading aloud.
That's right. They were after-dinner stories to amuse and scare his friends. Okay, it's been a very fun discussion of M.R. James and his ghost stories and these three interesting television films.
Yes, definitely. So, in summary, M.R. James wrote many different ghost stories, many of which have been adapted for TV and film and radio, and these included Casting the Runes, which was about someone maligning an author about the supernatural, who then puts a curse on the critic and a battle of what happens to the curse ensues. And it also includes A Warning to the Curious, which was about someone looking for the last of the three buried Anglian crowns, and what happens when the last of the crowns is dug up, and what effect does it have on the person. And it also includes Whistle and I'll Come to You, which was about a person discovering a whistle that was buried in a grave, and about what happens to the person with the whistle, and what happens when he blows that whistle. What does it summon?
Good stuff. Spooky stuff. And please do let us know if you watch them and if you have any comments.
Absolutely.
So next time on British Invaders, we're going back to the 1950s for another classic moment in British television history. And we're going to be talking about Nigel Neill's adaptation of George Orwell's 1984. Something to look forward to for next time.
Yes, that should be an interesting one because, of course, the book 1984 was a classic, and Nigel Neill's adaptation for British television is also a classic in its own way, so that will be an interesting one to talk about. You can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Thank you very much. Do let us know what you think of the three-show format. And this is Eamon from England saying goodbye.